We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
11 o'clock hour. It's Cody and Gold here on 610. You're all stuck at home. So are we. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us here from 10 to 2. Listening maybe on your smart speaker. If you're not, it's simple. Your favorite smart speaker, all you got to say is play 610 Sports Radio, Kansas City. You can also check us out on the radio.com app. We're a half hour away, 11:30. It's our Chiefs Red half hour. We'll get back into the impact on the NFL draft, well, if not maybe having the normal scouting and offseason workouts, and a couple signings in the wide receiver market yesterday that should tell us a lot about where things maybe are headed when it comes to the future of Sammy Watkins in Kansas City. That's in the Chiefs Red half hour. So there's so many people trying to do good here in the Kansas City area, around the country, around the world, sports or not sports. And Trevor Lawrence, who's the starting quarterback for Clemson, who most agree in 2021 will be the top quarterback selected, or one of them at the very least, in the NFL draft, extremely talented, and he and his girlfriend were trying to do some good over the last 24 or 48 hours in terms of a GoFundMe and trying to raise some money amid the coronavirus pandemic. This fundraising page for coronavirus victims on Monday afternoon, as a matter of fact, was put up for them, and it was immediately shut down. They had raised over $2,000, and a Clemson official said the university's compliance department asked for the page to be taken down to satisfy NCAA rules. Now, there's a long history, Cody, of the NCAA, whether it's fundraising, whether it's just other bizarre family circumstances where they have just really not thought things out, and the reason why the NCAA has been criticized so much, because when you hear that a fundraising page for coronavirus victims by a student athlete gets shut down, you say, oh, here's the NCAA again, not using common sense. And that's how it appeared right away. It turns out that it maybe was Clemson just being a little conservative through their compliance department, and they were concerned that the NCAA would do something. It doesn't seem as though the NCAA actually did that. But that's not the issue here. The issue is that that was even a concern, and that was a rule that even exists, and that was something that Clemson and Trevor Lawrence even had to deal with. The fact that that is even something the NCAA could have issue with and that we have to be cautious about is where I have the issue. Yesterday, it seemed as though it was actually Clemson acting on it and asking him to maybe shut it down initially. But it's all a bigger problem, which is the NCAA prohibiting student athletes from even using their likeness for charity.
Here's the, you know, you're saying the NCAA put out a statement like, whoa, 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 we didn't ask that dude to stop doing charity. Sorry, NCAA, you get exactly zero benefit of the doubt in this world because you've just done horrifying stuff constantly, like determining what is and what is not a job. They've shut down kids' YouTube pages because it became profitable. But he can go work at Denny's? What's the difference? Like, that's something he can actually do in his time. Now, as far as Lawrence goes, I'm glad. I'm glad whatever it was, whether it was the NCAA or Clemson or both getting on the same page to allow him to his likeness for good, that's a nice version of this story. But I don't fully buy the NCAA's, oh, we didn't tell him he couldn't story. And at the best case scenario is exactly what you described, Gold, is Clemson's like, whoa, 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 Trevor, man, whoa, can't lose you, man. We got to have you around. Got to have you around so we can win a national title next year. Take that thing down, please. Please, before the NCAA gets mad, because the NCAA does get mad over these things. Part of me thinks they would have gotten mad over this thing had Clemson not asked them to take it down first, and then they saw the backlash before they caught wind of it. So even the best case scenario, I don't buy that the NCAA was going to just push this under the rug.
I wonder if it wasn't Trevor Lawrence, too. You know, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is a huge name in the sports world, and most people believe he's going to be an absolute star in the NFL and a top pick and everything like this eventually. Like, if it was a smaller school or even, you know, someone on Clemson's team that's not Trevor Lawrence, I wonder if we probably wouldn't be necessarily having this direct conversation even here in Kansas City because people wouldn't know the player. But would the NCAA and would Clemson have approached it the exact same way?
Again, they shut down a YouTube page for a kicker, Gold. The NCAA has no problems putting the kibosh on anyone's revenue stream. You know, no matter how they're getting it.
Yeah, so I mean, this got
like
resolved
a week
pretty
ago,
quick.
We were talking about how, like, they're like, well, with coronavirus, we might have to put on hold them making money on their likeness. That's a really difficult thing for us to swallow right now. Like, what's it matter? I just think that, look, these things happen with the NCAA a lot, which is why I don't give them the benefit of the doubt. But I am really glad they're going to allow athletes to do this. Between that and, like, the Royals and Chiefs have started a big COVID fund to try to help the coronavirus. I mean, there's plenty of good to spread around, but the NCAA constantly makes these things look bad. I would give them any benefit of the doubt if there weren't hundreds of examples of them doing dumb things, shutting down stuff that doesn't need to be shut down for a thousand different reasons. I feel like if they had caught wind of this first, it might have gone different. And again, the NCAA just kind of wants you to self-report, but also punishes you worse if you do. So, you know, Clemson had to shut that thing down before they picked up on it, because had they been caught with something, the NCAA might have felt differently.
And fortunately, again, the end result here, at least on this particular example, is Trevor Lawrence was allowed to put that GoFundMe back up. And now, you know what, the great benefit of this is because of people's feeling toward the NCAA, you watch, and I should check the updated numbers. I would imagine that fundraiser now is going to explode, and they're going to end up helping even more people because of this.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Yeah, they'll probably get more. And, you know, again, that's why I pointed out, like, the Royals one, too. And we've seen what B.J. Kissel, the Chiefs reporter, has been doing with Feed It Forward and, giving out Jack Barbecue to all of the first responders. Yeah. All of that has been really tremendous, obviously, just across the board. It's been fantastic to see. I'm glad that local people are being involved in that. And I hope if other local athletes who are at the collegiate level, and I'm trying to think about who the best example would that be. Probably a Kansas basketball player at this rate. I mean, who's the biggest name athlete between the three schools and all three sports?
Yeah, it's a whole different conversation. Like, it'd have to be Dotson or Doak.
Probably. I mean, mostly because of the recency of the sport. It's definitely not a Kansas football player. So we can eliminate.
Yeah, but unfortunately, none of the other local teams were top. Nobody else was number one in the country. Or, you know, I think that's.
No.
This time, unfortunately, with where we're at with the three local schools, it probably would have to be that.
But football's a more popular sport, so I could hear an argument for a Missouri, you know, Kelly Bryant, you know, like whatever it is, a Missouri football player being the answer. I think the answer is probably a Kansas basketball player, but I hope that if one of them want to do some good here too, they're allowed to do so before they become professional. Some of those guys might become pros, and it doesn't really matter. But still, that's just kind of where we are, because we're in this holding pattern still in Sports Gold where we don't know what's going to happen. We're still stuck with baseball having no resolution to what their offseason is going to look like. And as I continue to tell you, Greg Holland and several other players across Major League Baseball, including for the Royals, can opt out tomorrow out of their contracts. And at least now finally some clarity from Jeff Passan at 3 a.m. I think I got that notification. That baseball seems like they're working closer to maybe having a deal done tomorrow that would at least stopgap some of the things in place for them. It could include, and this is the weirdest part, neutral site playoffs, two double headers a week. This is all if the season can't get started until early June, is what Passan said this morning, maybe is the hope. Expanded rosters, so they don't do a long spring training. Instead, just have more pitchers on the roster to help people cover it. Minor league pay and, you know, the start dates that I had previously mentioned. For me, I can't understand why baseball is still trying to squeeze in this many games. Why aren't they just settling for 120, 110, 90?
Oh, I understand why they're doing it. I mean, I think it should be down to 60 or 80 games, but we all know why they're doing it. It is all revenue-driven. That's all it is.
I mean, sure. I mean, that's something you could say that about it's a money grab, and 30, and you know, like they said that they didn't really have a particular appetite for playing games without fans, much like you mentioned. But if they start this thing in June, let's say they get all of June, and we're optimists, June, July, August, September, that's 4 months at two doubleheaders a week. That means they can, and by the way, we're not even including if a single rainout occurs, that's two doubleheaders a week. That's 8 games a month, right? Times 4 months. So we're talking 32 games you can make up. I mean, you're losing more than 32 games in April, May. You're losing, I don't know, 50, 60 games. So where are they going to make up the rest? That means going into September, you know, like late into October. So then, you know, like maybe you can make up 40 games, 50 games. Still, you're going to need this thing to start in June, or you're going to be playing baseball games in December. Like, I'm all for, like, I kind of like in my gut hate the idea of a neutral site playoff game. Like, playing the World Series in Miami kind of hurts my soul, but it's also, again, extraordinary measures call for extraordinary, you know, extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. So if there's a one-year deal because they got to play a game on November 30th, then whatever. But the idea of playing like a December 1st game at Kauffman does not interest me.
No, not at all. And you know, I think it's clearly it's money driven. And I believe baseball, even though the season was just about to start, heck, tomorrow would have been opening day. The Royals would have been taking on the Chicago White Sox. You would be listening to that game right here on 610 and everything. And so that's a huge bummer. But because the season is already 162 games, there is plenty of leeway for them to alter the schedule. I understand there's major issues behind the scenes, which we've discussed a little bit in terms of service time and how do you determine pay for minor league players. And it appears that maybe there is some progress on that we can get into in a second from Jeff Passan's report. But I think Major League Baseball is still, compared to the other leagues other than the NFL, which hasn't started, because of a 162-game schedule, they have way more leeway to even cut. You could, no other league could you say, we're going to cut our season in half. And truly, I don't think it's impacted all that crazily in terms of, you know, just making sure there's enough games to determine if you're able to determine playoff seeding and everything like that. You could play 50 games in baseball this year, and to me, that is plenty in 2020 to figure out who's making the postseason to feel like it was quote-unquote fair.
Sure, but then the TV companies are one going to give you a third of your rate, and, sure, you know, radio.
That's why I said it's money. It's revenue-driven.
Yeah, I understand, but fine, try to squeeze in some extra game, but two doubleheaders a week, that's nuts.
No, it's nuts.
You're not going to be able to maintain rosters of 26 for the entire season and just juice up on those days. You're going to need teams to have 30. I'm dead serious, like 30-man rosters. And honestly, if you like the Royals' young pitchers, hell, this season might have just gotten a whole lot more interesting. Brady Singer, we're going to talk to Vern here in about an hour. Like, if they're going to do 30-man rosters, I'm going to assume Brady Singer's on it. He's their sixth starter all of a sudden, or their seventh starter, because all those other guys who aren't making regular starts deep into games can become the long relief version. Everybody's going to be using a damn opener. I mean, every team is going to use, like, oh, it's a trash drawer game, so we got like seven pitchers available. I don't care how the hell we're going to use them. All seven of these dudes are going to throw today. And we're getting through a game today. If you're going to have two doubleheaders a week, we're going to see a lot more games like that. It's going to be wild. Maybe it won't be, like, maybe Serta will find it more interesting, for instance. A guy who doesn't always love baseball. I don't know that he's going to love the idea of, like, 8 baseball games in a week. But maybe he finds, you know, the increased movement in rosters more interesting. Because baseball's going to look a lot different if they're going to try to do two doubleheaders a week.
Think of all the games you can bet on. Double headers every day.
I tried to play fantasy baseball 1 year because I thought that might get me more interested into it. No, you got to do it every single day. I would just forget to do it half the time.
Yeah, fantasy baseball is rough. I think everybody, I can probably speak for a lot of people, they gave it a go. Everybody's tried it for like 1 year. How many actually followed it up or made it through the entire season? This year, you actually could do it. I think this year is a fantasy baseball type of season. You could get me to buy back into trying that again because it is going to be cut down dramatically. Now, what's interesting to me, though, we're mentioning that there's talk of still going ahead with, you know, all these doubleheaders. In the Jeff Passan report over on ESPN, he mentions that multiple players had, you know, had mentioned to him that they're willing to play a significant number of doubleheaders and as many as two per week. To make up for it. So, like, that I guess they all want to get back to playing. They all want to get their paychecks and all that. So I understand the reason and benefit to do that. But I'm still wondering, is the majority of Major League Baseball players okay with the potential injury risk, too? I mean, there is definite injury risk here if you're playing that many games and crunching it into multiple games and multiple days on a consistent basis.
Is Witt still going to play 162? If he has to play 40 doubleheaders in a season?
No way.
Like, I don't...
And I know baseball more than either sport. The record books, Cody, we've talked about that. I mean, I think that's the other ridiculous part of this. No other sport cares about the record books more than Major League Baseball, and I think that's another, besides revenue, another big push for probably so many people. Like, we can't have this season cut down so much. It's going to impact the record books. How are we supposed to factor all this in?
Oh, that, who cares? Yeah, you're right. Baseball,
well, that's what
does,
I say. Who
they
cares?
Shouldn't. Yeah, that's right. It's who cares. Like, just do a 100-game season. You could still do doubleheaders. You could still start in June. You just do one doubleheader a week instead of two. The season still ends at the end of September. The playoffs are still in October, and maybe by the 1st of November, the World Series is wrapped up. I just, like, why would you want to compete against the NFL that long, too? That's a whole other part of this. It's one thing to compete against the NFL in September when the NFL starts. Fine, you're wrapping up. Then October, you're getting like weeks 4 or 5, the NFL, and you're in World Series time. So fine. You want to compete during that time, too. You really want to be competing against December football? And December is no time to be playing baseball. It's already kind of a fascinating sport because baseball's most important game is played in its least common baseball weather. Like, baseball is a summer sport. It's more entertaining in the summer. The ball flies better. People perform better in June, July, August. You already push the World Series into a time in which people are less good at baseball. If you switch it into December, it's so weird. I know that you need to do things different because of what's happening, but between that or, you know, Scott Boras suggesting they just play a 162-game schedule with a World Series game on Christmas, like, what the hell are we even talking about? What you said?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's money-driven, too, by the way. They're like, we'll
Scott
play
Boras,
all the doubleheaders you want. That's because they want a 100% paycheck.
Yeah, you mentioned Scott Boras. We all know it's money-driven right away. You can't tell me there's ever been a proposal or idea from Scott Boras that did not benefit him financially. Good for him. He's been very successful doing so. But the idea of having a World Series in December on Christmas Day is just absurd because you mentioned the conflict with the NFL. Then you're having NFL. You're having, at that point, the NBA, who really everybody starts to get into the NBA in Christmas Day, at least in other parts of the country, that is. And that's kind of viewed as the start of the season. You'd still have the college football national semifinal getting ready to start around that time frame. Like, there's way too much competition besides the obvious weather issues and climate that you mentioned and neutral site games in Miami. It's not the actual neutral site idea is not terrible, but not if it's going to be in December.
No, it just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, baseball's, I don't like the NBA's got arena issues. Like, baseball, at least their stadiums are their stadiums. Nobody shares. Really? I mean, you know, they might have a concert or something scheduled, and the A's are still a disaster, but nobody really shares in baseball anymore. Your stadium is your stadium, mm-hmm. But, I mean, I already hate that they play, like, games in April in Minnesota, let alone December. That just sounds like a horrible disaster of a decision. I kind of hope what comes from this is that they figure out some ways to do things a little bit different. I'm excited they're going to pay minor leaguers. I'm excited they're going to do, and that's only for, like, a month. I know it doesn't solve the problem. And if anything, for me, this might make the Royals season more interesting. And the reason why I think that goal is because you might see a lot more young players we weren't expecting to see early on. If they're going to be twice weekly doubleheaders, Khalil Lee might be up here a whole hell of a lot sooner than you thought.
Oh, and I'm all for that. I think Royals fans would be all about that. I mean, we've seen the discussions and that we've had, and our listeners have mentioned what they want to see, you know, the timeline for Brady Singer or, as you said, Khalil Lee, any of these other young players. And it does change the dynamic for that. So there is a way, not just because of the young talent that you could see in a shortened season, but also the potential to just be kind of in the hunt, whether you really think they are or not. But you're not going to really be ever out of it if all of a sudden the season is 80 games or 60 games. You're going to be in the mix a little bit longer. I'm not saying they should be you know, trading for guys if there is a trade deadline, whatever it may be. We don't know what that's going to look like. But from a fan perspective, if you're telling me that you're going to see young players and you're also going to maybe not be 15 games out of first place in the first 2 months or 2.5 months of the season, yeah, I think that's going to be great for fans.
Ken Rosenthal also suggests, like, he's got an article up on The Athletic with, like, a bunch of kind of wild ideas of, like, hey, here's how things could look different. One of the ideas someone suggested in the comments was just to go to a, you know, a, like, you do a doubleheader, but you do, like, adult men's leagues where the first game is 9 innings and the second is 7. Whoa, okay. Well, at least you're not playing quite as much, like you said. The stat book stuff, you just got to let that die. If baseball's going to die on that hill this time, that's just silly.
I don't, having some games 7 innings and some 9, ugh.
Yeah, what the hell do I care? What do you care? Like, I know in your head you're like, baseball's 9 innings. This doesn't sound right. But again, it's...
like, that's different to me than
shortening a
season.
Would you prefer that or them playing games in December?
Yeah, that's different than shorting the season or playing
well,
a World
Series
game
might
in
accept that
December.
Totally, totally. But baseball still gets all of its TV money. Serta only has to watch a baseball game for 2.5 hours, not 3. Like, there's a large appeal of, like, baseball wants to move faster. Why wouldn't Rob Manfred entertain something that quickens 2 games a week by a significant margin?
That is truly changing the game itself. Like, that's why I don't have an issue with the idea of shortening the season. Like, you're all of a sudden mentioning shortening a game by innings because of this. I know there's consequences. Everybody's adapting leagues, but I don't think... you know, we don't see the NBA considering, let's go ahead and play shortened quarters now going forward. And I understand the example is because of doubleheaders and all that. But, like, I just don't think you're not going to all of a sudden have different rules within the actual game itself. You want to talk about roster limits and that kind of stuff makes total sense to me. But actually changing once they're on the diamond, the rules of the game just this season because of this, I think that's a little bit too far. I don't think that's necessary. All the other stuff is open. And that stuff that's going to have to probably happen for the leagues, not just with baseball. They're going to have to alter scheduling and rosters and how they're going to pay guys.
To me, the only thing, it's not changing anything about the game. It's just changing the length.
That,
like,
is
that
the game.
That doesn't fundamentally change how you win. That doesn't fundamentally change how you play. It's no different than roster limits because part of the game is the strategy that comes with, you know, part of the game is the strategy that comes with how you're going to use relief pitchers. And you're like, yeah, hell, don't have to worry about that. Like, you're asking teams to essentially have a 6th starter in a league that has never really done that or to have extra
bullpen
arms.
Well, then don't do the double headers. Just go down to 50 games. That's fine with me, too.
Yeah, they're never going to do that, though. I'm talking about, like, realistic options that give them all the games because I don't think they're ever going to settle for, sweet, 60 games. Because I'd take that. Serta take that. You'd take that. But I don't think the league is ever going to accept that.
So you really do think we're going to get 162? I just don't think – I think when it comes down to it, they're trying to be optimistic. Right? I think when it really comes down to it, and if we're in mid-June, and nobody knows, you know, how long this is all going to – the way we're all living now, how long we're going to be living like this and everything like that. But I think at some point you do run – I don't think baseball deep down, despite Scott Boras, I really don't think we're going to be seeing baseball in December, no.
I don't think we're going to see baseball in September, but I think we're going to see it later into November, and I do think we're going to see the doubleheaders. And while I don't think there's going to be 162 games, I think there might still be 135.
We'll talk more about this with our Royals insider, Josh Verner, coming up at 12:30. We'll get his thoughts on what's been discussed for Major League Baseball going forward. Coming up next, though, it's a Chiefs Red half hour. What's the impact on the draft, maybe moving out of the month of April half for the Chiefs? And the wide receiver market, what's it telling us over the last 24 hours and the impact it has on the Chiefs and the future of Sammy Watkins?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
The Chiefs Red Half Hour back here on Cody and Gold. In 15 minutes, you'll hear from Harrison Butker, Chiefs kicker. He was on with Fesco in the morning. What did he have to say about how important Brett Veach has been to his career and what makes him confident that the Chiefs can repeat in 2021? But is it more challenging to repeat than it would be in another scenario because of the current climate we are all living in right now, the impact it has on the NFL offseason, Cody, the draft might now, there's a chance at least, GMs are recommending, that the draft does not happen less than a month from now on its originally scheduled date. It'll be in studio, we all know that, on television, but there was that report from Adam Schefter that the draft could maybe move out of the month of April, and if it happened, his idea was to have each round of the NFL draft on a separate night and give us seven crazy nights of NFL draft round by round. If the NFL draft's not going to have the normal offseason workouts and the scouting that goes with it, even with technology, I mean, the two moves the Chiefs just made yesterday, minor moves, Mike Pinnell re-signing him, re-signing Anthony Sherman, it's not a terrible time to be in the position the Chiefs are in, just in terms of, you know, you don't have a ton of money to go bring in new talent. Right now, they don't have a ton of draft picks, and I'm not advocating that, hey, I wouldn't rather have the Chiefs have 10 picks than 5. Of course not, but just there's some value in having guys that are familiar with your system even more than we typically would already assume.
No, I think it's a pretty sizable advantage. Now, we can't really know until all this thing plays out, but I honestly think this is a pretty sizable advantage for Kansas City because there's no scouting. Not the scouting the way it used to be. Sure, you can watch all the college tape, crunch on that for a while, and yeah, we're about to find out how valuable those meetings that teams carefully pick out are. But I think there's a pretty good chance we're going to have no minicamp, no OTAs, no off-season workouts, which means all you're going to get to do is look at an iPad. I mean, yesterday, there was a video of a Kansas football coach posting stuff for quarterbacks, only to be contacted by Kurt Warner to tell him how he could look at, only to be contacted by Kurt Warner to teach him how he could be doing a better job teaching quarterbacks. So it's not even like one problem solved. I mean, a lot of these coaches are going to have a hard time switching over to a fully technology-based learning system, specifically because quarterback is so hands-on, or wide receiver, because like, oh, I got to show you how to move your hips, do this. What are you going to do, sending videos to those guys? So in a normal year when I would say just break up with players, you know, there's a lot of times after Super Bowl, after any season, there are probably 10 players in your roster that are expendable for every NFL team at the end of every season. You know, especially when they start getting too high priced. In a year where they win the Super Bowl, maybe let a couple guys go. I'm maybe not there the way I used to be because I feel like having an established team with players who know what they're doing is going to be a bigger advantage this year than it has ever been in the NFL.
And I also wonder, you know, there's danger in with running things back, but I don't consider even like the two minor moves that they just made. Like Mike Pinnell, I think a lot of people wanted him back in a Chiefs uniform and saw the impact he would have. Plus, we haven't seen the dollar amounts. He's going to get a bump in pay, no doubt. He deserves it, but it's not going to be significant. Anthony Sherman, who knows? Is that going to be close, you know, to like the vet minimum? I have no idea. A little bit above that if, on a one-year deal. Like those aren't even the ones where I wouldn't have been overly concerned about. I think when I'm talking about like running it back and the danger of doing that, it is with guys like Sammy Watkins. It is with guys, and not necessarily with Chris Jones, but veteran players that are going to have plenty of interest from other teams that are out there and just kind of going status quo with everything. And we've talked a lot about what the rest of the AFC is doing and how the Ravens are being aggressive and how the Chiefs are not. This is another reason why I'm not as concerned. I think this offseason is a lot different than what we've seen in the past, not just because of the Chiefs team coming off the Super Bowl championship, but because of the reason we mentioned, where you're not going to have the access to get as much information as you had in the past firsthand. And you're going to also learn, I think, what young players, whether it's in the draft, whether it's just young players in your own team, who's able to have, you know, the ability. Some people are more visual than others and able to pick up things quicker. You brought up the video scenario. Yeah. Like, how are you supposed to teach somebody? We'll find out. And the advantage is going to be to some of these young guys, if you draft them, that are able to learn visually versus actually having to have someone do it to, you know, in front of them or for them actually do it themselves. I think there's going to be a learning curve that's tougher than maybe in the past, but also an advantage if you feel like, you know, some of your guys are better as truly visual learners. We hear that all the time, whether it's sports or not. I think there's clearly even for those people at home that are trying to get their kids to learn right now. Cody, you know, I know your kids are pretty young, but they're trying to do the e-learning stuff. Like, there's going to be an advantage for some people over others with that, and I think it also equates to football.
Look, my kids are young. Desmond's not in school because he's only one, but Rudy is. And we already have, like, packets on the way, and we have to, they're trying to work out ways to do video conferencing for, like, speech therapy. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be different than it's ever been in a lot of regard. But for Kansas City, this is actually an advantage. Because if everyone's playing in this, then the team who knows themselves the best will have the best advantage. Then all that you're trying to dodge is performance decline. And for the players you just talked about, Sammy Watkins, I mean, we're talking about performance decline. He was a 650-yard receiver last year, or at least below 700. Okay. Chris Jones, performance decline. Nah, that's not coming this year. They bring him back. It's not this season that you would expect his performance to decline. That would be after the age of 30 that you would anticipate a normal NFL player having that kind of dip in production. So Kansas City's in kind of an unusual place. Also, by the way, I do think this gives Chris Jones more value. And I don't think he needs more value. I think there's more than enough value to just sign him as we sit right now. But it definitely gives him even more value, because do you really want to try to be learning even more things inside of that? It's either that or you go after veteran players who've been in enough systems that can figure it out. Maybe another missed opportunity on a guy like Darius Slay, whose contract numbers came out today. Remember, we talked about his deal, Gold, being $50 million. Boy, that's a lot. Just in general, for a guy who's 29, oh man, that deal is impossibly good. He's owed $4.3 million this year. That's nothing. He's owed $15.7 million next year. That's about where decent corners get paid in any given year. You can't cut him because the dead cap will cost you more than normal. But then the following year, while he's owed $19.7 million, he can be cut. And you can save 13 with a 6.5 dead cap hit. And then in 2023, in year four, when he's like 33, he's a $20 million debt. He's a $20 million cap hit. You're like, well, that sucks. He's 17.5 to save. He's only a $3 million cap hit to keep, so, or to cut. So, like, there are deals to be had, I think, from veteran guys who could pick up a system quickly. But having your guys around for the first time in a long time, I might be a little more inclined to hold on to players I might let go in other years. Now, I think they're kind of stuck with Watkins. And I think you guys talked about the Robbie Anderson deal yesterday coming in for 2 for $20. That deal, plus Bashad Perriman's deal yesterday coming in at $8 million, six of which was guaranteed, to me establishes enough of a market around Sammy Watkins to know that he's worth somewhere between $7 and $10 million a season. He's owed $7 million this year, no matter what, Gold. So if he'll take a pay cut anywhere down to $10 million, you're probably not going to find a wide receiver better for him in the market for $3 million. Not likely. I would call it extremely unlikely, as a matter of fact.
And this is why, kind of waiting longer than we thought. Here we are getting ready to be a week from when we thought maybe they would have made the decision to cut Sammy Watkins, or the restructure announcement at the start of the league year and everything. By waiting here, you've allowed Sammy Watkins. While you as the Chiefs, if you're Brett Veach, you may have known that this was – right, how the wide receiver market was going to go, and you anticipated that, as we've discussed in the past, in fact, earlier in the show. But maybe Sammy Watkins and an agent didn't believe it, or they wanted to see, and rightfully so, what it would look like before they agreed to a certain type of restructure. Now you do know. You're right. Now you absolutely know what that wide receiver market's going to be if you are Sammy Watkins. Robbie Anderson, 2 years and $20 million, and then the Perriman signing. We've also just seen some of the Emmanuel Sanders contract down there in New Orleans with the Saints. And so you do know what the market is. And I think when it happened, you tweeted at me. I tweeted initially, you know, is Sammy Watkins willing to take that? And, I mean, we're about to find out. I think the answer at 2 years and 20 would have to be yes. And as far as take that, it would essentially be on that restructure. If you're Kansas City, all of a sudden $9 million doesn't seem like quite as big of an ask towards Sammy Watkins based on what you know the market is. And yes, Sammy Watkins will be a guy that teams are very interested in, but the idea of him getting north of $11 million or $10.5 million just isn't going to be there anymore. And so I think the Chiefs have played this very well, and I agree with you. There is a very good chance now that he ends up back in Kansas City, and the fact that Robbie Anderson's 2 years, 20, is to me the bigger reason why, even more so than what Perriman, for example, is getting there with the New York Jets, who I have no idea why on earth they're doing that instead of trying to find a way to keep Robbie Anderson.
Well, they obviously should have kept Robbie Anderson, but Perriman is essentially Sammy Watkins. I don't know how to break this to people, because Sammy Watkins is like a playoff hero, and I'm not saying I would obviously take Sammy Watkins over Perriman on the Chiefs for a number of reasons. One, he's a better scheme fit. But for a lot of reasons, because I think he's a slightly better wide receiver. But Perriman only had 25 less yards than Sammy Watkins last year on like 30 less targets. So, you know, before we start just knocking down the Perriman deal, because he got $8 million, Robbie Anderson is definitely $2 million better than Perriman. So yeah, why didn't they just sign Robbie Anderson? I don't know. Maybe Anderson wanted to bounce. That doesn't solve it. But Kansas City is still going to be stuck in a place where they have to overpay Sammy Watkins based on production. And I know Perriman's production all came in this like microcosm of after two guys who were injured went down in what is clearly the most pass happy offense in the NFL last season in the Bucs. But again, 30 less targets than Sammy Watkins for almost identical production. Watkins is who he is. I don't think there's like some mystery about who he is. If you got to pay him $10 million for 1 year, whatever, because you're going to have to pay him $7 million anyway. But I mean, before, you know, like Perriman's deal feels like that's the number you should be asking for Sammy Watkins. How are they not similarly priced if they're getting similar production?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get him at that exact price. What do you say, 1 year, $7 million or 1 year, $8 million?
Eight. Yeah, why not? I mean, why won't Watkins just take $1 million more than he's going to get if he gets cut?
Yeah, and I think if you are the Chiefs, it's just with the market, it made it realistic that you can maybe get him in that 9.5 to 10.5 range or 9 to $10 million range. I still think he gets more, whether it's in Kansas City or elsewhere. I think he still gets more than Perriman. Maybe it's, you know, and I haven't seen the details on the Perriman deal, how much of that is, you know, if there's any incentives on top of the $8 million.
Six is guaranteed.
To get there. But yeah, $6 million is guaranteed. Okay, there you go. And so, I mean, the first five games for Perriman, 3 catches, 16 yards, no touchdowns, and a guy that, you know, ended up with virtually the same numbers as Sammy Watkins and had a nice bounce back season. Remember, Perriman's now on his third or fourth team since he's been in the NFL. I mean, there is something to be said for a guy that was just on a Super
Bowl Watkins
team,
is on his like,
had a great
fourth
postseason.
Team too.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, Rashard Perriman is a little bit younger player, and I feel like he's already been. I have to look at the exact team differential, but I believe he's been on as many teams as Watkins, and he's younger.
Watkins has been on three teams. He spent three in Buffalo, one in LA, two in Kansas City. And Perriman, you're right, started his career, if you remember, with the Ravens, and had almost 500 yards in his rookie year, which is, you know, McCole Hardman like. It's a little bit below that. It's more like Chris Conley like. But only started a single game for them that year. 2 years with Baltimore, one with Cleveland, one with Tampa Bay, and with, you know, now up, you know, in 2020, it looks like he'll be in his fourth team. So, yes, he has bounced around quite a bit, and he's had some health stuff too and has never been a full-time starter. He only has 10 career starts versus Sammy Watkins. Watkins has a much better career. There's no doubt about that. But teams who talk themselves into this guy had a better career, they're pretty much the same age, by the way, Gold. They're not way younger. Perriman's 26 years old. Sammy Watkins is slightly older than that. But I do mean slightly. He's also, yeah, he's about a half year older. So based on age and production, Watkins has been much better. But Perriman should, for other NFL teams, come close to kind of setting a market for him, just because otherwise you're lying to yourself. You're setting too high a standard for Sammy Watkins, which is what every NFL team has done since he had 1,000 yards in year two on 124 targets, which is an impossible amount and certainly not a number that, you know, the Chiefs are ever going to give him, or really any NFL team is going to give a wide receiver like that. Again, teams just don't, you know, they're not going to hand out that kind of target numbers to him. For instance, in peak year for Tyreek Hill, he got 137 targets. So around that, you know, a little bit better than that number, but had 1,400 yards to show for it. Not 1,003.
So Kansas City has, I think, a better feeling. So does Sammy Watkins, maybe more importantly, a better feeling of what that wide receiver market's going to be. And now maybe things happen a little bit quicker on that route. I still don't think the Pinnell and Anthony Sherman signings are the reason why all of a sudden things get sped up. Like, if we were to get an answer on Sammy Watkins' future tonight, let's say, or tomorrow morning, I think it's more about what just happened with Robbie Anderson and maybe Perriman as well, as far as something moving a little bit quicker. I guess I'm a little bit more patient than some people about how the Chiefs have operated. Like, I don't think it's as if, oh, my gosh, now that we're seeing it's the market's coming back to Kansas City, they got to pounce on a couple guys that are out there and make these decisions now. I think they've been playing this right. To me, it's been just fine so far, especially if all of a sudden it ends in the end result of Chris Jones getting a contract extension and staying in Kansas City for the long term.
Well, I love that. I mean, if all of it leads to that, then you're not going to hear a complaint out of me. But if they took all this time, let some good value free agents at positions of need walk, and then it still leads to Chris Jones leaving, I might not feel so good about it. If I'm being honest, I'm not going to nitpick everything the Chiefs do, but also just because they won the Super Bowl doesn't mean we can't be critical. And I'm not saying you're being this way, but I think there's some people like, well, they won the Super Bowl. Everything they do is right. No, everything they did last year is right. They got to keep doing things right this year. I think it was you, Serta, who had even voiced a bit of frustration over, like, it seemed like the wide receiver market and some other markets, you know, cornerback and others that would help the Chiefs have been kind of quiet. And you said that dreaded phrase of, I just don't want this to be like with Aaron Rodgers, where they stopped putting talent around him for a couple of years after they got the Super Bowl. And that should be a real concern, shouldn't it, Serta?
Yeah, and I understand that they have no cap space right now and that they've got to make some moves to figure that out. But when you're consistently seeing these other contending teams making moves that are making them better, and we're not hearing anything from the Chiefs, it gets a little frustrating and concerning because they are the defending Super Bowl champions, but the way they're currently constructed, there's holes on this roster that they need to figure out how to fill.
No, I understand the frustration. Absolutely, there are holes on the roster. I just think, would we rather have last week if they would have jumped out and overpaid for somebody, then we fast forward a week later and see that the market is what it is now and they've overpaid? Like, to me, I would rather them be in the position they are right now than if they would have reached on somebody, went ahead and cut Sammy Watkins early and spent a little bit too much money on, you know, you name the position, you name the player, whoever it may have been, and then we fast forward, here we are, we're seeing, wow, they could have got this guy for a lot cheaper. Why did they overpay? Like, that's a way worse position to be in, obviously, than, to me, where they sit right now. I just think we got to be a little bit, you know, patient going forward and see. Yeah, if they're not doing anything, we reevaluate, and it doesn't mean that I'm going to say they're going to have a great offseason, but I just think it's way too early to make that the determination right now when it comes to that. Now, you mentioned, you know, the Chiefs are coming off a Super Bowl win. It doesn't mean, you can just be status quo entirely. Harrison Butker, Chiefs kicker, was on with Fesco in the morning, and he was asked what makes him confident that the Chiefs can repeat in 2020.
Well, I just think, you know, with Patrick as a quarterback and seeing his work ethic and his drive, I mean, there's going to be no letting up and taking our foot off the gas pedal. And obviously with Coach Reed at the top, he's already been talking about how he's, you know, studying film and getting ready for next year and trying to do it again. So I think we just have the culture in our facilities is just that of, you know, we're going to put our head down, work hard, keep doing our thing. And, like, we know what works to win games. We know that process, and we're just going to repeat it and hopefully get a couple more rings.
So that was Butker just talking about that. Obviously, confidence in Andy Reid and what they're able to do. And I think there's a ton of motivation, obviously, still within everybody there. It doesn't mean what this offseason does or doesn't happen on the Chris Jones route that won't impact the team on the field. But I don't think anybody's worried about the drive, if you will, of coaching staff and of players whatsoever just because they won a ring a year ago. I think, nope, that's far from anybody's concern.
Well, I would say that there's always a few players that's going to be concerned with. Whether we like to pretend like the Chiefs are different, there won't be a single player who has lost motivation. But the key players in this, Mahomes and Reed, you know, Mahomes is thinking, I could be one of the greatest of all time. I'm one of the youngest quarterbacks ever to win a Super Bowl. And I could just keep piling on with Andy Reid as my coach. And Andy Reid waited so damn long for one. No doubt he's going to keep staying hungry. But to pretend like there'll be no players that rest on their laurels a little bit, is probably a bit rich. I mean, aren't we just
I mean,
like...
I don't know. I mean, the key guys that we consider to be foundational people. You mentioned Mahomes and Reed. I know I would like Kelce, Hill, Clark, Matthew. I guess, and maybe I'm wrong. And but I think the key guys that matter the most on this roster, I'll throw Chris Jones in that. We don't know if he's going to be on it or not. But yeah, I'm not. There's a couple guys that I have no doubts whatsoever.
Sure. No, there's a few I have zero doubts about. And you're right. The makeup of the team, like Tyrann Mathieu, is not going to be the kind of guy who's just like, nah, I'm good. See ya, fellas. No, he is definitely not that type of player. And I think we've seen that Frank Clark doesn't strike as that kind of player because that happens with a lot of guys who just get paid. It's not always a Super Bowl. Some guys just get a big fat check and are like, well, deuces. Just going to kick it back here for a little bit. And we saw that Frank Clark was still motivated at the right level. But I just think it's always like, it's putting on blinders if we pretend like no one's going to do that. But the important part, like you said, is if you ranked the seven most important players on this team and you included Chris Jones, I wouldn't worry about a single one of them being that guy, the guy who rests on a Super Bowl win.
100%. All right, let's get to the last minute.
Last minute.
The Rams unveiled their new logo this week. It's terrible. Twitter has just been universally trashing it pretty much. But Rams executive Kevin DeMoff is trying to funnel the hate into a positive direction. He told USA Today that if the LA Telethon fundraiser the Rams held Tuesday topped $2 million in donations to the benefit, he would spend time on a social media video reading the most hateful tweets about their new logo.
Hey, that's awesome. Good for him. Like, reading mean tweets like what we've seen on late-night television. At least they're having fun with it and obviously trying to help people in the area. Good on them. That's smart. Just go ahead and own it.
First, they're not all terrible. Just the text one that says Los Angeles Rams is okay. The rest are trash. The one that looks like hair I can't get past. The one that looks like some combination of like the Chargers and the Rams logo, but like horrible Karen hair, I can't get past. I'm just like stuck on that one forever. The like
Ram
weird
good,
geode. It's all right. I don't hate it. It's okay. I'm worried, man. Other teams are going to screw this up. The Chargers are like, oh, the logo's going to be something. I'm like, oh, God. And it was just like they took away some of the navy blue. You're like, whew. I thought you were going to move away from the lightning bolt. We're going to really screw this thing up. But I'm glad they're willing to do something. But you know what they should do, Serta, is if instead of raising $2 million, they raise $3 million, they let us design a better logo that doesn't look like trash.
Yeah, I mean, there's already been another one designed on social media that just looks better.
They spent all this money from a marketing firm that then gave them reasons why they shaped this a certain way, and they had to come up with reasons for it and wasted all this money, and they could have just had the public out there doing some Photoshop, coming up with logos. This happens. And there's like seven teams that are tweaking their logo or uniforms. The Chargers, you mentioned, with their logo. The Bucks, I guess, are going to make some tweaks as well. So it's weird. There's a bunch of teams making changes, but not the case in KC. Best uniforms in football.
That feels like a biased opinion.
Not at all. Not at all, Cody. Not at all. Coming up in the noon hour, we get to what's trending and where one national commentator ranks the Chiefs. What do you have to say about the AFC West? Are there more losses on the way?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at kclend.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.